I'm Gabrielle Jackson, and this is The Full Story.
I think we are building a picture of this virus, and we're constantly learning.
We're now about 7 months into the coronavirus. As every week passes, we learn more about this novel virus and the effects it has on the human body. For the first few months, it looked like people who caught COVID-19 fell roughly into three groups. Those who contracted a vicious illness that was deadly to some. Those who experienced a range of, generally speaking, flu-like symptoms, but who seemed to recover after a few weeks. And finally, those who had no symptoms at all. But now...
Every member of every family, because this is not just a disease of the frail aged. This virus can cause tragedy in otherwise healthy people of all ages. That's what the international evidence shows us.
We're learning that this disease can continue to affect people for months after they've contracted it, who are being dubbed the long haulers. Today, what do we know about the long-term effects of COVID-19? It's Tuesday, the 28th of July. Mel, there's been a lot of conjecture about whether this virus is or is not just like the flu, quote unquote. But is it right to say that in terms of severity, most people kind of looked at the statistics and thought, well, healthy young people would pretty much be okay? Is that right?
I think what has happened is the data has changed so much, and it's such a tough call to make.
Melissa Davey is a health reporter and the Melbourne Bureau Chief for Guardian Australia.
At the very beginning, we didn't really have much data, and it's a fine line between reading too much into it and panicking people, but then also not taking it seriously enough. And there were a lot of assumptions at the beginning about what happens when you get this virus. And there was a lot of talk that you get sick, you get a cough, you might get a sore throat, and then... much like a cold, you'll probably recover within a couple of weeks and go back to normal. But we've found out that this virus definitely behaves differently than that.
Okay, so we're now kind of 7 months, almost 8 months into the virus. What do we know about what's happening to people when they get it?
So while a lot of people will just get a mild illness and recover, there are many reports that this is more than a cough and fever and shortness of breath for some people. People are reporting a wider range of symptoms when they have the illness than we initially heard. So it's things like loss of smell. They feel this fatigue, this heaviness over them. They have a range of different heart symptoms, including a racing heart and pain in the chest. And some people are also reporting strange symptoms weeks after the virus has passed, so long after they're infectious.
So what are the symptoms that people are reporting weeks later, Mel?
Well, there are some researchers in Australia who are looking at this exactly, and one of them is Associate Professor Gail Matthews. She's the head of infectious diseases at St Vincent's Hospital in Sydney, and she said that symptoms months after patients have left hospital include persistent shortness of breath, headaches.
So we're talking mainly fatigue, which is a big one. We're talking still about some persistent feelings of chest discomfort and some shortness of breath in some patients. And some of the mild ones, you know, the loss of smell is still persisting.
And Associate Professor Matthews said she's seeing a range of different ongoing symptoms in the patients that she's treating.
Another interesting thing about the study is that we're just looking now, so around a third of those patients still have symptoms now. And that's 3 months after, 3 or 4 months after being infected. And actually, if you look at the group who came to hospital, almost about 80% of them still have some symptoms. But if you look at the group who were, out of hospital, they'd never had to come into hospital, they would be sort of your mild patients, if you like, about a third of that group still have symptoms now.
What's becoming really clear is that while some people leave hospital or recover from the illness and they're relatively fine, there are others who have these long-term symptoms and they're really struggling with them, and we just don't quite know how that will play out longer term.
Do we know how likely it is that people will experience long-term effects?
So Associate Professor Matthews has been following just under 100 people since they first came to St Vincent's Hospital, and they've been undergoing tests every 3 months to see whether the virus was associated with lasting effects in the immune system or the blood, the lungs, the gut, brain function. And they're just starting to get the results in now, so they're preliminary and they're still going through them. But she said what they've found so far is about a third of those patients still have symptoms now. And that's 3 or 4 months after being infected.
A third is a pretty big number, isn't it?
It's significant. And if you look at those 10% of cases of that cohort who were admitted to the hospital, so they didn't just go to emergency and then were sent home, but they actually had to be admitted because they were really severe. Those serious cases, about 80% of those patients still have some symptoms. So much, much higher number of patients in that severe group who are still affected today.
So what Professor Matthews' results show is that if you end up in ICU, you're pretty likely to experience ongoing symptoms months later, and there's a 30% chance that if you have even a mild case of COVID, you'll have ongoing symptoms. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Basically, what Associate Professor Matthews says is that the symptoms between the hospitalised and the non-hospitalised group of COVID patients are similar. It's just that they happen much more frequently in that group of patients that went to hospital.
Do we know if some people are more likely to get it than others?
So what Associate Professor Matthews said is that the age range of the St Vincent's Hospital cohort is about 20 to 79 years, and just under half of those are women. She said that she doesn't have any more details at this moment on characteristics of those with or without ongoing symptoms, because this is still a trial. They're still undergoing different analysis and statistical analysis. So there's also identification issues as well with such a small group, but that's what we know so far about who is having ongoing symptoms.
So what do we know about why this is happening? Like, what is it about this virus that's causing this reaction in some people?
Different doctors say different things. So, you know, I've had several doctors say to me that this virus triggers this extreme immune response in some people. The immune system just goes crazy. It's something that researchers are really looking into.
Yeah, so Professor Gregory Dorr, I'm an infectious diseases physician at St Vincent's Hospital and an epidemiologist at the Kirby Institute at the University of New South Wales.
Professor Gregory Dorr, he's working on the same trial. He said that there are several things they're looking at in terms of long-term effects and what's causing them.
I think the key point here is that we're keeping a very open mind. Some people have dismissed this group as being mainly psychologically driven. And clearly, with any syndrome like this, there's the potential to be an element of direct physical effects of the virus in the immune system and a psychological sort of effect, because it's been an incredibly anxious, uncertain time at the individual level for people. But I have no doubt that this syndrome is triggered by the virus and the proportion of people that they have these sort of effects. Now, whether that's a sort of aberrant or an abnormal sort of immune sort of response to the virus that continues, that's something we need to uncover.
And does this happen in other viruses? Is this ongoing illness comparable to any other kind of virus that we've seen?
Yeah, so I think many people would be familiar with the ongoing symptoms you get after recovering from some viruses like influenza, or if you've had something like dengue fever. You do recover eventually, but you can have ongoing symptoms. People feel ongoing lethargy or fatigue after they've recovered, just like the flu, just like dengue fever. It can take a while to feel well.
Next, life after corona. Mel, for a long time, you know, we know a lot of people in the community thought that, you know, if they were young and healthy, they could just catch COVID, get immunity, and then they'd be able to move on with their lives. But what you seem to be telling me is that this really is not that easy.
It's just not that simple. And, you know, we don't want to overplay it. Yes, people who get this virus, they will likely recover. Lots of people do recover. But there are huge ongoing effects for other people. And it's not just in the elderly, and it's not just in people with comorbidities. And we still don't quite know the long-term effects of this virus.
We've said all the way along, and not for any other reason than the international evidence, the facts of these matters show you that this doesn't discriminate between age, doesn't discriminate on gender, doesn't discriminate on any basis whatsoever. It's a wildly infectious virus, and if you, whether you have underlying complex health issues or whether you are otherwise healthy, people have died from all of those cohorts and more from right around the world.
That's something that the Victorian Premier, Daniel Andrews, was saying very strongly last week.
So there's no reason for anybody to think that because they're otherwise fit or because they're not in their 80s, then somehow they've essentially got a vaccine for this. They just don't. Everybody is susceptible. And
he reminded people that this is a serious illness, not just for people who are elderly or sick, but for everyone.
This is not like a common cold where a week or so later everything feels fine. It presents in many, not all, but in many, as much more like a chronic illness where it takes quite some time to get over it. This is not something anybody wants to get, and it shouldn't be something anybody wants to give to anybody else. And that's why wearing masks, and it is the vast majority of people are doing that. I'm very grateful.
It's also something Professor Dorr was really keen to highlight, that the mortality rate might be sitting at about 1%. That's an estimate, but let's say 1%. And people think, well, that means that 99% of people are okay, they're totally fine.
Well, that's absolutely not the case. When you have 10% or more people hospitalised, when you have even those people that are managed in the community, a proportion of those people having ongoing debilitating symptoms, this is a scary virus in the way it can affect people.
So the other thing to note on mortality, and this information came out last week, is that coronavirus is cutting people's expected lifespans by, on average, more than those dying from the country's three leading causes of death.
Tell me what you mean by expected lifespan.
So expected lifespan is just looking at the age someone died and then considering what their life expectancy would have been. And that creates the years of life lost. So, for example, if you have a white woman who died at the age of 50, who had no comorbidities, you might look at whether or not she was expected, given average data and given all of her characteristics, to live longer. Preliminary calculations for Australia found the average years of life lost per person to COVID-19 was 17 years for men and 14 years for women.
Wow, that seems a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's been this perception that people are dying from COVID-19 who wouldn't have had many years of life left anyway, that they're old, they've got comorbidities, maybe they were in an aged care home, maybe they were even already, you know, in hospital regularly. So there's this perception that, well, you know, maybe they didn't have much time left anyway. Even if that was the case, it's still tragic, but we're learning that's not the case. They did have a lot of life left to live.
Okay, so what else is going to be studied? Or maybe the question I should ask you is, what else needs to be studied?
So we know that there's a lot of work going on into neurocognitive testing. So this basically is just, how does this affect the brain? We know that some patients have had strokes, for example, and blood clotting. So how do they recover from that? Do they recover from that? And Professor Dorr also says there's also been researchers teaming up with social science to unpack the experience people have had around this. So experiences of stress, isolation, you know, what does being diagnosed with COVID-19 do to you long-term psychologically? What's it like to be in a hospital and to be told that you can't have visitors because this is such a contagious disease? Mm-hmm. It's really important we look at those kinds of impacts as well.
It must be so hard for people who have COVID-19 and to have the long-lasting effects of it, to experience to experience it with no end in sight. What can these doctors tell their patients about recovery?
Associate Professor Matthews says that she tries to reassure patients that many infectious diseases come with long-term effects. COVID-19 isn't unique in that regard, but because the virus is still so new, she said it's really difficult to know how long patients may have these symptoms.
Yeah, look, I think what we would say is, you know, we're confident it's very likely you will make a full recovery because even other viruses which cause post-viral syndromes usually, you know, there is a full recovery, but it may be more prolonged in this case. But we do have to be honest and say we don't know, and nobody in the world knows. I mean,
it's really hard to say 100% for sure that they will recover, and whether or not the effects will be permanent.
Does that have a psychological impact as well?
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that Professor Dorr was saying, that there is that psychological impact. And even if that psychological impact is also causing physical symptoms, that doesn't make it any less traumatizing or debilitating just because it's an effect of that anxiety, I suppose. So I think it's something people are very aware of.
It was good, I guess, in this sense to hear the Victorian Premier, Daniel Andrews, reminding people that this isn't over within 2 weeks, that for a lot of people it is long-lasting. Do you think that will have an impact?
I think it will. I think, you know, you raise a really important point that we can't forget about these people. We can't forget about the family members who weren't infected but lost loved ones, or who experienced having loved ones in the ICU. We can't just forget about people once they've recovered. It's such a unique experience to be one of the people who caught a novel virus that we still don't know much about. And that journey isn't necessarily over once you leave the ICU or once you get told you're no longer infectious.
Thanks very much, Mel, for sharing your amazing insight into this disease.
Thank you for having me.
That's it for today. Thanks very much for listening, and thanks once again to Mel for her time. You can read more of her reporting on COVID-19 at theguardian.com. If you liked this episode, please do leave a review for us wherever you listen. They're really helpful. Today's episode was produced by Ellen Leibeater and Joe Koning. The executive producers are Miles Martignoni and me, Gabrielle Jackson. And I'll see you tomorrow.